This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. This week, the U.S. and China reached an agreement on carbon emissions, the first of its kind. But Republican leaders don't seem too happy about it. Senator James Inhofe called it, quote, a non-binding charade. House Speaker John Boehner called it the latest example of the president's crusade against affordable, reliable energy. Allow me to invite you into a political time machine for a second, though, to a different time in Washington. June 1989. President George H.W. Bush's speech on amending the Clean Air Act.
I reject the notion that sound ecology and a strong economy are mutually exclusive. So last week I outlined 5 points of a new environmental philosophy. 1, to harness the power of the marketplace. 2, to encourage local initiative. 3, to emphasize prevention instead of just cleanup. 4, to foster international cooperation, and 5, to ensure strict enforcement. Polluters will pay.
Yes, polluters will pay. President George H.W. Bush proposing cap and trade for sulfur dioxide to solve the problem of acid rain. Just a year before that, Ronald Reagan had signed the Montreal Protocol, phasing out CFCs to give the ozone layer a break. He did it with the unanimous support of the Senate. So what happened to that bipartisan commitment to environmental issues? My next guest is a longstanding member of the environment movement and a one-time Washington insider who served as an environmental advisor to the Carter and Clinton administrations. Gus Speth is the author of Angels by the River. He's also co-founder of the Natural Resources Defense Council and a professor at Vermont Law School in South Royalton, Vermont. Welcome to Science Friday, Mr. Speth.
It's good to hear your voice again, John.
It's good to talk to you. And if you'd like to read an excerpt of the book, sciencefriday.com/angelsbytheriver. You can give us a call as well, 844-724-8255. That's 844-SCI-TALK if you want to talk about the climate in Washington. So, Gus Speth, how did we get to where we are today? Why was environmental protection something that everyone seemingly could agree about back then, and now they just can't now?
Well, it is interesting. When we started in 1970 with the Clean Air Act, for example, the parties were not far apart at all. We had strong bipartisan support for the Clean Air Act and the Clean Water Act, and Senator Muskie, a Democrat, worked with John Sherman Cooper, a Republican, and not only were they bipartisan, but these people believed in science. I mean, they listened to what the science was telling them and tried to get the best science available and be guided by it. Since that time, we have seen a separation of the parties, which I deeply regret. I'm sort of partisan by force at this point. But it's now gotten to the point where it's hard to find a good environmental record among Republicans, and it's hard to find a poor environmental record among Democrats. There are some exceptions, but they are exceptions to the rule. I think one thing that has happened, John, is that the environmental issue has been swept up into a larger complex, a complex in which there's a strong anti-regulation movement. There's a strong anti-tax movement. There's even a strong anti-government movement. Mostly within the Republican Party, so it has become a partisan thing. But the environment has been sort of a victim of these larger trends.
I'm wondering how much of it, though, is, and you mentioned this belief in science that you recall from the early days of your work in the environmental movement. Is that really key to it? I mean, are there just a lot of, not just politicians, Gus, but Americans who just really don't believe in the science of things like climate change?
Well, I think there's been a quite intentional campaign, which has been well documented by science historians like Naomi Oreskes in her book Merchants of Doubt. It's been called the tobacco strategy, and starting in 1979, a movement was launched by the tobacco industry to sow the seeds of doubt about the harms of tobacco, and that then moved into doubt about the ozone depletion issue, and it's now moved into doubt about the climate issue. But there has been an intentional effort to create this sense of doubt. It's playing into a couple of other things, I think. One is that, you know, as a public, I'm embarrassed and that we're not really that well educated on science. I saw this statistic recently that only half of us know how long it takes the Earth to travel around the sun, which is kind of unsettling. And we know the unfortunate position that evolution holds in our society. So you've got that at play. But what another thing you've also got at play is the reality that if we take science seriously today, this means we're going to have to have a strong governmental response to the climate issue and to other issues. And there's just an ideological resistance to having a strong, effective, capable government nowadays. And so the people who don't want the government to regulate, people who don't want the government to move us to a new energy regime, find science quite threatening.
Well, one of the things, though, that you've written about for years is how the environmental movement itself maybe has failed in capitalizing on some of the things it could have over the years. And maybe one of the things they need to do is make a better case for the market to intervene, for business to intervene, and make sure that people understand it's not just the government has to get in the way of climate change, but we all do. Business does as well.
Well, I think that's right. And it's good to see business leaders like Bloomberg and Rubin, former Secretary of the Treasury, and others calling for action from the business community as well as from government to address the climate issue. And, of course, there's a lot we can all do in our own lives, and that's important. But the bottom line is that this problem is so severe and so with us and so threatening to our children and grandchildren, it's going to take a very strong governmental intervention, and we shouldn't walk away from that. We need to embrace that.
We're talking with Gus Speth, who is the author of the new book Angels by the River. One of the things that the acid rain controversy had going for it is that name, acid rain, right? It's really great marketing. People don't want acid falling from the sky, and so there was a lot more government consensus around that. Climate change has always sort of had a problem. I mean, is it global warming, Gus? Is it climate change? Does climate change really need to have a better marketing campaign, something for people to rally around than it has so far?
Well, I think there are several issues. I mean, I've sometimes in my life sort of wished that carbon dioxide was purple or something that, you know, we could see and relate to. But it is a odorless, colorless gas that acts in a very chronic and subtle way. It's not an acute effect. We had another global problem with the ozone depletion, but the cancer was a focal point for the action to protect the ozone layer. On the other hand, it's changing. I think people are learning a lot more about communication in the climate area. And what we saw in New York just a few weeks ago with 400,000 people showing up in the streets of New York from all sort of segments of society and segments of our country, a very diverse movement, and people. It was a positive occasion in the sense that people were finally getting an opportunity to express themselves on this issue, but there was a lot of anger underneath it. I mean, people are very concerned about the entire coal fuel cycle, for example, the mountaintop removal, the fracking. The effects of climate change, which are beginning to show up in storms and unpredictable and severe weather, in droughts in the Southwest and in California. I mean, it's happening now, and I think the effects are going to drive this movement very powerfully.
One of the conversations we often have is about how conclusive the science around climate change is. I'm wondering if you can take us back to those earlier issues, you know, CFCs or acid rain. How good was the science on those things? Was it as conclusive in your mind to make those cases as climate change is right now?
We know a lot more about climate change and this climate science now than we knew about these other problems when we addressed them. I mean, it's not a is not a scientific issue. It hasn't been a scientific issue for decades, if truth be spoken. When I was in the Carter administration, and I'm afraid I'm that old, we put out four reports that addressed the climate change issue. And in one of them, in our last month in office in January 1981, we knew enough then to suggest from the Council on Environmental Quality, which is part of the Carter White House, we knew enough then to suggest what the upper limit of the buildup of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere should be. And looking back, we weren't far off of what would be a safe margin. So there really hasn't been for decades now a serious question about the need to radically change our energy policies. And now what the tragedy, John, is that we knew this 34 years ago, and we have wasted that time. And there's nothing we can do now to stop some very serious effects that our children and grandchildren will inherit. So we are left with the option of stopping the worst effects, the effects beyond the ones we are fated to experience. And we'd better get very serious doing it now. And we have so many problems at home and abroad to be debating the science of an issue which was settled a long time ago is such a detour from
Gus Speth is the author of Angels by the River. I'm John Dankosky, and this is Science Friday from PRI, Public Radio International. And we're talking with Gus Speth, his new book, Angels by the River. He's also co-founder of the Natural Resources Defense Council and professor at the Vermont Law School in South Royalton, Vermont. Just lost him for a second. Gus Speth, you back with us?
Yes, of course.
Hey, I want to get your take on the U.S.-China climate deal that just got struck and how you think that's actually going to work. Is it going to have the impact that many hope it will?
Well, it's a good step. We had the same experience with when the president came out with his proposed regulation of existing power plants. We get euphoric, and then the next couple of days, people begin to look at what the data really are telling us about what the announcement really means. And I think we have to say it's a good step. The most important thing, perhaps, is that it validates this international process and and that China has finally taken a stand. That's the good news. The bad news is that it's not nearly enough. And, you know, we, at current rates of emissions of these gases, 20 years is all we have. And by that point, we will have exceeded this idea of holding global average temperature increases below 2 degrees Celsius. And there's nothing in this deal that we've reached with China which is going to deflect that trajectory. I mean, we are still on a path to completely use up the carbon disposal opportunity that we still have. And so we're going to have to act much more seriously than this deal suggests if we want to hold global average temperatures below 2 degrees Celsius. And there are many who think that that is too much warming in and of itself.
We talk a lot about these international treaties, and then we talk about the federal government. You write in your book, environmental law as it was created in the 1970s was federal law. Our view of the states and cities was disdainful. They had done so little. That's what you wrote in your book. Are we seeing some of the opposite today, though, on the local level and the state level? Maybe more is able to get done than countries can.
Well, it wouldn't be hard to do more at any level of government than we are doing in Washington today. More seriously, the great things that are happening in our country today, I think, are happening at the state and local level, and that's true in environmental protection, and it's true in climate action. I mean, you know, California is taking this seriously. Some other states are taking it very seriously. There are a lot of municipalities that are acting, and we need to encourage that. We need to encourage as much of that as we can, and it will help.
You write that, yeah.
Excuse me, go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. We're running a little low on time, but I want to ask you about the type of conventional environmental organizations that you helped to found. In many ways, you say that they're not getting everything that they could get done. You call for something you call the new environmentalism. Quickly, if you would, Gus Beth, to tell us what that means.
Well, ask what an environmental issue is. And the traditional answer is air pollution, water pollution, climate. Yes, those are all environmental issues. But what if an environmental issue is whatever determines the environmental outcomes, whatever affects our prospects for saving the environment? And if you answer that question, you immediately have to confront the fact that our politics is the biggest factor. We have this, I'm afraid, a failing democracy, a creeping corporatocracy, a creeping plutocracy in our politics, and environmentalists are going to have to join with others to do something about this. And similarly, when you have a country which half the people are just getting by, living paycheck to paycheck, and this vast economic insecurity, you know, environment is always going to have a hard time. So we need to take up the social justice issue. And in it, there's our own affluenza, our own consumerism. I mean, we need to think that to realize that our lifestyles and the aspirations that we pursue in everyday life are you know, not getting us really at our deepest needs and deepest objectives in life. So I think that environmental community is going to have to sort of step out of its old frame and to embrace political reform in a new way, to embrace social justice in a new way, to embrace changing lifestyles and values in a new way. These are fundamental things that will affect whether we succeed or fail in the environmental issue over time, and it's high time to make this change.
Well, Gus Beth has been part of this movement for quite some time. He's co-founder of the Natural Resources Defense Council, professor at Vermont Law School in South Royalton, Vermont, and he's also the author of Angels by the River. We've got an excerpt at sciencefriday.com/angels by the river. Gus Beth, always good to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.